Y'all can see I have a drinking problem, only now it's Gatorade. My name is Matthew. I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Matthew.
I am not a talented speaker, but I'm going to go ahead and just spill my guts. How's that? All right. You guys asked me to come here so that I could tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. That guy on page 123, the childish guy, asked me, emotionally sensitive? You bet. And grandiose? Definitely. Definitely. I was born into confusion. My household was, for my sisters, it was pretty good. But for me, it was very strict, a lot of discipline. In fact, I got, he called it spanked. For me, it's long-lasting welts and bruises, but it was not unusual for him to, my father, to chasten me in that way. And when I say why, he says, well, you're just going to have to figure it out, aren't you? So that really set me up, because eventually, you know, up until the point I was 18 years old, the discipline lasted, and I basically came to the point at age 18 that, okay, well, if this is the way I'm treated, and this is how life is, and this is the world around me, well, then if I'm going to get beat up over it anyway, why not just do what the hell I want to do? At least it's for a good reason, so I thought. The effect of it was a great deal of fear. Fear of my dad, primarily, but fear. A lot of fear. And it had a way of lowering my self-esteem and my self-worth. I really looked at myself as being gutter-level trash person, you know. I had low confidence, low courage, no self-respect. As much as you guys aren't going to believe this, being that I'm up here doing this monkey business, I am inherently introverted and shy. So God has a sense of humor, there's no doubt about it. So, and then my sisters, particularly one sister, while my father felt that I should earn absolutely everything that I had, my sisters, but primarily this sister, would really receive money hand over foot. While I'm working my butt off to buy a trumpet, she's given a horse, you know. And we didn't start out well off, and we didn't end up well off, but there was a little blip on the radar in there, and that's when it was most pronounced. And the only way I got any attention was negative attention. You know, do that long enough, it's like, well, I need the attention, so let's go ahead and break the blade on a lawnmower. And then it set me up for a lot of low-paying jobs, because what would happen, I had a decent head on my shoulders. I did really well in school, but what ended up happening was I saw that my sister got. I'm just picking isolated events. Obviously, there's a bigger story to this, but you guys are probably counting seconds. So, anyway, so my father would pay me 25 cents an hour, while all my peers were getting $1 and $2 and $3 an hour. for doing stuff around his business, his work. And that really, I ended up walking away from that with a real low opinion of my skill set. And then I didn't understand. My father was not at all, he did not seem to love me. Now, this is all perception of an alcoholic mentality. So, didn't seem to love me at all, and seemed to love my sisters. And I thought, wow, I'm just not a lovable person, I guess. And so I had a air superiority, why I had a low, absolute bottom level opinion of my abilities, but I wanted to look like I was doing something. I wanted to be somebody. So I took that trumpet that I earned and the lessons that I paid for, and actually ended up winning an award, and practiced like crazy to win this award. I actually ended up winning the award, but because it didn't match my idea of who I was, I immediately quit playing the horn. And I think you guys probably can relate to that a little bit. Assassinate your own success, And then I tried to meet society's expectation. I thought those were courage, confidence, toughness, respect, success. I thought I had to live up to those things. And so I, on the surface, that's what I did. Excuse me. I'm drinking again. On the surface, that's what I did. All the while, have an argument within myself as to, well, you really can't do this. And so I did this. I was excellent at getting in there and getting a job. I could do the dance. I could do the dance really well, but I may or may not be able to do the job. And it worked alternately. I go get the easy job, I'd be successful at it. Okay, well, this place don't appreciate me and know how much I'm worth. I'm gonna go over here and do this difficult job that's over my head that I can't do. And then as soon as it becomes obvious that, well, you may have got the job, buddy, but you sure can't do it, I was out of there. And so all that to say, my employment history looked like a checkerboard. Just moving pieces all over the place. And then I got into self-employment. I don't know whether you guys remember some of those multi-level marketing programs out there, Amway and Herbalife and all those fun things. Well, I thought, well, I'm gonna succeed. My dad will just have to, I'll show him, And I got involved with all, I mean, multitudes of, I'm gonna be rich and successful, and he'll just have to respect me and appreciate me. And all the while, this unfortunately is factual, that my dad had absolutely no pride in me at all because I wasn't society's expectations for real. I was just putting on a facade. He knew that. So at about 18 years old, I tipped back a cup full of liquid courage, and that's where it started. The very first time that I drank, now this is the first time I drank well over a quart of whiskey in a matter of 2 or 3 hours. I just kept pouring it down. Well, obviously, I had alcohol poisoning, but it didn't matter. I just didn't want to feel anymore. That eventually evolved, and I drink more. In the future, I would drink more, and I always ended up drunk. But on the way there, it got to the point where, okay, maybe I am successful. Maybe I am acceptable. Maybe I am lovable. Maybe I, all those things I shared with you. Yeah, I've met society's expectations. I'm good. This is Matthew, and you just have to respect me. And so all of a sudden, I had courage, confidence, toughness, respect, success, and approval in my mind, in my drunken mind. But I, whether it's because I couldn't, or whether it's that I set out, I never drank without the intention of getting drunk. Now, some people, I'm going to have a couple drinks and the drink goes on. It's like, okay, I drank a quart last time. Let's see what I can drink this time, And so obviously all of this is in my mind and my perception. But I wanted it to be in your mind and your perception. So I had a real hunger for acceptance and notoriety and success. And I did that revolving door with jobs. Well, I did the same thing with AA. I first came into recovery in 1988, summer of 1988, and got involved with a church. And this is not to knock the church. It has a place. And I think alcoholics also, if they're involved in a religious organization, they can also find recovery in an AA organization. The two can run parallel. So in any event, then I the church told me that AA was a sin. It's a sinful group, and you need to just stick with the church and let God deliver you. Well, oddly enough, that lasted 5 years on the first go around. Then July 19th, 2001, it lasted 7 years. But remember how I told you that my dad scared the hell out of me? Boy, I tell you, the woman I was with did too. Oh boy. So I didn't drink for 7 years, but the minute that we split up, the day we split up, I was in the liquor store. So obviously, I didn't have a re recovery worth a hoot. I didn't have recovery. I didn't know what recovery was. I had no clue. All I knew was this woman can tear you a new tail tunnel in a heartbeat. So, in any event, summer of 1988, I truly broke when that happened. Even though I went with what the church said about AA and the whole nine yards, I sat there and I was in the middle of the living room of an apartment. I was supposed to be out of that apartment that day. I lost a business that same month, and I lost my place to live, and I lost my fiance. I screwed it all up. I was true to form. Only this time I wanted to do something different, And so I sat there, and it's really odd. I was sitting there, just broken, really broken. And then a song came on that I'd heard a thousand times, but it came on called In Heaven's Eyes. And it's like, okay, the world may not look at you like a success elevated personality or whatever. The world may not look at you like that, but God does. And I just broke down crying. I'll never forget that feeling of having lost everything. You know, homeless, the whole nine yards, you know. And so anyway, every time I came into the room, I would get involved in a relationship, you know, the infamous she'll fix me, not me. So I was in my marriage for 10 years and I drank within 5 years. I was in that God help me, she's gonna kill me relationship for 7 years. I didn't drink for 7 years, but after that 7 years, I told you, I drank like a fish. And then I was forcibly retired due to an injury. So at that point, the way I saw it was I was never going to be a success. I was never going to garner respect. I didn't have an ounce of courage, confidence, toughness, self-esteem, self-respect, and I was always hungry for approval. And I just buckled and I drank for a good many years after that before I finally came to the point that, to be honest with you, I didn't think anything was going to work, but I would give those AA guys a try. So now I've got 4,508 days today, one day at a time. And I was given a moment of clarity and recognition of myself. My best thinking is what got me into AA. Each time, most definitely this time, I really felt like I couldn't trust myself any further than I could throw me. I had absolutely no faith whatsoever in my ability to recover, let alone anything else. And that was that for finally, my lack of confidence and lack of, you know, had low opinion of myself and the whole nine yards actually paid off, because that's exactly where I needed to be. I was a broken man. But what's odd is not only was I broken on March 14th, 2011, but I was also broken in summer of 1988. And it's really weird. What happened to get me to run into AA was I not only did I turn up liquid confidence alcohol, but I also use solid alcohol, so to speak, not to bring outside issues into it. So I kept finding myself at that particular juncture, I kept finding myself standing in front of the liquor store. You know, no recovery at this point, just trying to get sober. I'm standing in front of the damn liquor store, the ABC. And then I came to the point where I knew who the dealers were. I knew how to get that old death wish, and I was about ready to make a phone call. I said, "What the hell am I doing?" And at that point, all of my memory of that summer of 1988 came back. And the brokenness I felt at the time on March 14th, 2011. So I immediately went into multiple meetings, two, three times a day, for a long time. Long time I did that. Then I had a sponsor from that tour I did in 2001, July 19th. I had a sponsor that I got at that time around in name only. We didn't do a doggone step. We didn't do anything. We didn't. I didn't call him. Nothing. Nothing. He's just an unused sponsor. So when I came back in, he just kind of looked at me cockeyed because, in his mind, he didn't even know he was my sponsor. In my mind, he's my sponsor. You know, I go to him. I kneel down next to him and says, "Hey, I'm working on steps 1, 2, and 3, and then I'll get with you on that other one." So he just looks at me and says, "I, you know what? No." I said,
No.
"What?" He says, "You want me as your sponsor?" I said, "Yeah." "Okay. Meet me here on Thursday night, 6 o'clock." I met him at Thursday night at 6 o'clock. Pulled out a big book. Says, "This is what we're gonna do." And so it's the first time I was taken through the steps. First time I even read the book. And all those visits, the first time. So he got me right into working the program, right into it. He didn't wait for me to come to him and say, "Well, gee, you think we might ought to take a peek at these or anything," which I never would have done. But he put me right in that book. And again, going back to my best thinking got me here in that moment of clarity, I realized, you know, I want this thing. I want it so bad I can taste it. You know, I want this thing. These guys around me, they're happy. They got this higher power they can deal with. You know, I want this thing. So I dug in. Not only he would give me an assignment, "I want you to read this in the big book and this in the 12 and 12 and come back next week and we're gonna talk about it." We met once a week. Well, being the anal retentive type that I am, I went home. I not only read it that day, 2 or 3 times a day, each day thereafter until we met again. I just, by the time I could almost recite the materials I went in, you know. I'm not playing. I'm going to understand this thing or at least have some understanding from this thing that I can take into the next time we get together, and then he can tell me what's up. And so I did that, and that was my habit. 2 or 3 times a day, the readings that he prescribed for me until we next met. And we did that to such a degree that it actually kind of scared him because we were moving through the book pretty quick. He didn't expect to move through as quickly as I was moving. So he's a little worried. "Wait a minute, wait a minute." "I've had people go through the steps so slow that a snail passes them up. You know, but this guy, he's hungry. He's really hungry. And I don't know, am I going through the steps too quickly is what he's asking the sponsor, you know?" And "No, go with him." And so I finished up the steps in about 5 months, steps, traditions, concepts, and in the 12 and 12 and the big book, primarily the big book, the 12 and 12 was merely a commentary, but you know. And then I don't think I was finished with the steps more than, definitely not more than a month, but it feels like about a week when he came to me and he said, "Okay, I got something to keep you sober." "Okay, what? Says, "I want you to be a group service representative, a GSR." "What? No, I don't think you understand. I am shy by nature, introverted, low self-esteem, failed at everything. I can't do it. Says, needless to say, I ended up GSR. Yeah. So much so that I took it before, he took me before the group to make me GSR. He asked the group's permission because it was supposed to be a year before you ended up at GSR, was the suggested program. So, no, we've been watching this guy, let him do it. So, I tried to preach that. I said, listen, I don't have a year yet. So, he took care of that. He sure did. I'm going to read you what that service has meant to me. I was a GSR for 10 years, not recommended way of doing things, not the rotation that the group was too small to get a rotation going. But because I really didn't, it took a long time for me to begin to understand something. And I'm going to read an article that I put together for our newsletter in the district. And at that point, I had become DCM. And it was my parting article, but I want to read it to you and give you an idea how valuable service has been to me. What service has meant to my recovery. Service, when I came in, it was a seven-letter cuss word in my book, and just maybe in the dictionary of more of us than just I. If I did anything that even remotely resembled service, it didn't just have strings, it had cables as thick as an elevator's. If I didn't see a way to get something out of it, I simply did not do it, using a litany of justifications to make myself feel like my inaction was the best thing for one or many in need. Maybe it was once, maybe twice out of countless declines to help. But that was enough for me. Then came AA with all its 12 steps talk, importance of sponsorship, introduction to a higher power, call to selfless service, and finally that damn 12th step in many different forms. And I still wasn't moved. I was there for me. There were no two ways about it, and I had absolutely no interest in helping others, whether directly or indirectly. Fact is, there were only three entities in my small little world, me, myself, and I. One thing I did desperately feel, however, I felt that I would do anything to get and stay sober, and that one thing is saving my life. Moment by moment, day after day, month after month, year after year, for 12 and a half years as of at this point. So what happened? My sponsor happened, darn opportunist. He knew I was desperate to recover from the hell I came from. Anything had to be better than where I came from, I thought. Never, ever had I imagined that I would find myself with the multitude of blessings I enjoy today. I find myself wanting everyone to have what I have. That has been my driving force, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Remember, I was talking about my opportunistic, sneaky sponsor. What did he do, you ask? He waited a whole 1 month. Yeah, just a month sober. He had the nerve to say something like, I've been doing this coffee gig for years, and I could use a break. He went on to say, if you do this gig for a little while, I'll let you know when I'm ready to take it back. Being the sucker that I was, I actually believed him. Needless to say, he never asked for it back. Next thing I know, I actually wasn't willing to let it go without a fight myself. Fast forward 5 months. I had just wrapped up my first go around with the steps when my sponsor said something similar to, I've got something that will keep you sober and really help you in your recovery. Our group doesn't have a general service representative, and I think you would grow immensely. While I was and am full of gratitude for what God, the people, and the program have done for me, I felt very ill-equipped to do the job, and I told them so. Oh, lost my place. The spirit of his response is an unforgettable part of my recovery. He said something along the lines of perfect. Sounds like God will have to do it. Just show up. He'll do the rest. How can you argue with that? So there you have it. To quote the big book, page 45. Well, that's exactly what this book and AA is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problems. He has, he is, he will. As to service, I now have a little bit of history and service that in and of myself, I could never have done. Still can. I've never been qualified to do anything that I've been asked to do. When I think I can't do the next thing in front of me, it shows up and shows off. It's at times like these when I hear my sponsor's words echo back, perfect. Sounds like God will have to do the rest. Yeah. Very true words. And so, because I want every alcoholic to have what I've been given and to be a part of the process that makes it possible for others to offer the same great hope, I will just keep showing up. The rest is a God gig. Worthy of note, if you are incapable of performing a service in AA, you're probably right, and that's a good thing. The smaller our egos are, the bigger God is in every circumstance of our recovery, and most certainly in service. So if you really give it some thought, there is just one question to ask yourself. Am I willing and able to just show up? If your answer is yes, then you are definitely on the road of the most fulfilling experiences you will ever have. Yours in love and unity and service, Matthew S. Nobody special or qualified, but somebody willing, doing the humbling duties common to many DCMs in a small district like ours. So that's the article. My worst day sober is a heck of a lot better than my best day drunk, by far. Right now, I lived on cloud nine up until a couple of months ago, and I'm still pretty close to it anyway. But some things begin to happen all at once, all within the last 2 months. My mom has reached the age of 80. My youngest sister, who suffers from pain at the intolerable levels, absolutely intolerable levels, can no longer keep up her care. So, stressor number one. I'm gonna have to bring my mom out here. I'm gonna have to bring my sister too, because she's not gonna be able to live in San Diego alone. Then there was a concern about my middle sister. Yes, I made amends and everything was healthy there. My middle sister, what is she gonna do if we leave her behind? She's also handicapped and has been depending on Kelly, my youngest sister, to take care of her. Then my son, his sharing of this disease with me, he finally hit a bottom that he can't see as a bottom, and so he's out on the streets. My middle son just went through a miscarriage with his girlfriend. Then my solace, my love, my just a joy in a unique way was my dog Skitter. Her kidneys failed. We had to put her down. And then my middle sister was found dead on the bathroom floor. And all that's happened in the last 2 months. Still wouldn't trade it for anything, what I have. Nothing. Nothing. I am one of the happiest campers you'll meet. I have a happy, joyous, and free life. I'm getting freer. Yeah, this has been tough, but it always goes back to the same thing. I can't get through it, I got a higher power that can. And so I'm trudging along. So happy to be part of this program. And a miracle happened. Somewhere along the way, a miracle happened, because when all of this happened, I had absolutely no thought of a drink. That's amazing. Now that's a miracle. Not only that, I had a sponsor before the sponsor that I currently have. I had a sponsor that first go around in July 19th, 2001. First go around, I hooked up with the guy that greeted me at my first meeting. And he agreed to be my sponsor for a period of time. He passed away a few years later, but and I ended up with the unused sponsor. So but he gave me something that didn't take in 2001, but somehow came flying out vivid colors on this go around. I go to him, I said, "Listen, I've got a serious problem. Okay. I've got an ingrown toenail and it might kill me." "Okay, anything else?" "No." "Well, everything will be all right." "I don't think you understand, I might die." "Everything will be all right." Seriously, I came to him with some serious concerns, but that was always his answer. "Everything will be all right." And I, for the life of me, was like, "What is wrong with this guy? Doesn't he understand? This is horrific. This is terrible. He should be consoling me and making me feel better. Shoot, he could even shed a tear or two. I'd be happy." But he didn't. He just said, "Everything will be all right." Well, this time around, for some reason, when God brought me into this room on March 14th, 2011, that was right there to greet me. All of the separation from alcohol and all of the problems that I had gotten myself into as a result of it. Every time I encountered something that was too much for me, I could go back to that fact that everything will always be all right. And somebody else said not too long ago, and I thought that was a great line. Fact of the matter is, every one of us has made it through everything that we've ever gone through, or we wouldn't be here. Doesn't matter what we faced, we made it through. We succeeded. We're 100% successful. Well, having said that, I could tell you about an experience I had. Okay, I'll try to keep it down below 10 seconds. I was out drinking with that first wife that I shared with you. She didn't drink, but I sure did. Well, let's put it this way. A beehive is not the only thing that buzzes after I drink. So I insisted on driving. Okay, so drive down the road a little bit. So, I see the bubble gum machine in my rear view mirror. And I thought, "Oh gosh. Okay. So, sir, do you know You have a taillight out? I said, "No, no, officer, I don't." "Yes, you do, honey. I told you about that last week." "Well," I said, "sir, do you realize you're, you know?" And then I turned to her and I basically said, And then he said, "Do you realize your license expired?" "Oh no, I didn't realize that. Honey, I told you about the envelope that came in with your notification." "Be quiet." And then, "Sir, have you been drinking?" "Doggone it, Mildred, stop it." Officer bends his head a little bit, looks over to my wife. "Does he always talk to you that way?" She was real helpful that night. She says, "No, only when he's drunk."